When I was studying to be a pastor, I worked very, very hard. I love hard work. Hard work is good. Hear me clearly in this sermon when I talk about work. I think work is a gift. Those who don't have it often realise that. I remember when I was working on an apricot farm, one day the farmer came out and yelled, "Pull your finger out!" And I hadn't heard that one before. I'd heard things like head down, bum up, you know, no guts, no glory, etc. I'd heard lots of things, but I hadn't heard pull your finger out. And I'd worked on building sites and all sorts of places, and this was just his. So I'm just wondering if you can think of things that people say when they are telling someone or themselves to work hard, to persist, to have grit and guts. Can you think of things people say? You tell somebody or tell me. Now tell somebody else for a moment. What's something that someone might say when they want you to work? Get with it. Did I nick the best ones? Get a wriggle on. I've had that said to me by farmers too. Farmers can be very good bosses and very bad bosses depending on the situation. Any others? Shake a leg. Get a move on. Good. Now hear me clearly. I think work is a good thing. It's a gift from God, but that's a different sermon. In this sermon, I want to talk about when work becomes a religion, when making stuff becomes the thing, when buying and acquiring and getting and selling and owning and possessing become the thing. I want to talk about what happens when a world gets obsessed with productivity. When a world starts to value people only if they pull their finger out or shake a leg. When a world starts to value people only for what they can give you or do for you or make for you or make you feel. I want to talk about what a world obsessed with productivity looks like. And the best example I can think of is the fourth or fifth biggest company in the world, Amazon. Have you heard of Amazon? Amazon is so big, it's worth more than $1 trillion. A trillion is, come on, Miller and Odette, how many millions? It's a million, million, million. So it's like 12 zeros. Amazon is worth $1 trillion, and you might think, I'm not a customer of Amazon, I've never bought anything from them. You've probably all had dealings with Amazon and just not realised it, because they are big. And Amazon's religion is productivity. We value people for what they do and what they produce. This is an Amazon warehouse that we now have them in Australia. In an Amazon warehouse, the workers are reputed to be treated like robots. They have to keep up with a conveyor belt and with computers. And as computers have got faster, the workers have got faster. And even if they stop briefly, this is true, alarms will go off if a worker stops. Every single thing that a worker does in an Amazon warehouse is timed. The minute you start a job, a timer appears next to you, counting down the seconds you have to finish that job. Literally, tick, tick, tick. You're constantly bombarded with timers, and if you don't make the timers, you get called in to talk about your productivity. Here's another picture of an Amazon warehouse. It's reputed that managers at Amazon actually said, if we could have everything done by machines, we would. We'd rather have everything done by robots, but they're not up to it yet, so we'll treat the people like machines. And so they established little boxes throughout their warehouse, which people call Zen booths. And if you're not working hard enough, you can go and literally go into the mindful practice room. It's a coffin with a TV screen in it. Is this giving any of you the heebie-jeebies? Yeah. Okay, so it looks like a French torture chamber. We will give you the mindfulness. Okay. This is for real. If you're not performing, go in the box where you'll get some relaxation. How are you feeling about this? Guess how long an Amazon worker on average lasts in an Amazon warehouse? Well, it's actually 8. Because most of the workers, particularly this is in the US, that work in an Amazon warehouse, minimum wage, which is much less than the Australian minimum wage, and they're desperate for a job, and they last only 8 months, and they burn out and break down, and they're gone. Now, I'm pretty sure I said that I believe work is a gift. Good work is a gift that contributes. Don't hear me wrong, but in a culture that is obsessed with things and with numbers, a culture like that becomes a culture of productivity, where we start to value people for what they do for me, or what they give to me, or what they produce for me. And I think Amazon is one of the best symbols of that. And in the thinking of the Bible, in the Old Testament, that would be hell. That would be the number six. The ultimate hell is 666. But today, I want to talk to you about a different number. What's that number? Seven, which is Sabbath. Before I get to that, though, what happens if our country becomes a place where we value people for what they can produce, what they can make, give, earn? What happens in a society where productivity is everything to the people that don't produce? And we're surrounded by them at St. Luke's, and I've got to know by name probably two dozen homeless people that circulate around here. And, you know, most of them are homeless because they've got intellectual disability or mental illness. Actually, that's actually why. Not because they don't want to work. They'd love to work. But what happens is, in a culture of materialism and greed and productivity, people that can't produce, what do we think of them? Or people like our Graceville clients, who we love dearly. What happens in a culture where we say, well, what do they produce? If they can't produce something that we value, what happens to them? It's not pretty. Or what happens when people who have been so productive in their lives, in measurable ways, are no longer able to be diligent or active or able or even remember? You see, in a world based on what you do is who you are, in a world based on how much you produce or earn, in a world based on that, people become disposable. And this is why I love the Old Testament of the Bible, that first part that people often dislike so much. I love the Old Testament because the Old Testament has 10 commandments. Can anyone tell me all 10 right now? Go. No, it's okay. The Old Testament has these things called commandments, basic rules for life, basic morality. But these commandments are entirely based on the idea that human beings are totally, completely, utterly, unbreakably valuable. That's actually what the Ten Commandments are based on. So when they say don't kill, it's based on the idea that we human beings, infinite value, no matter whether we're young, old, rich, poor, whether we can work or not. The Ten Commandments, when they say, don't desire other people's stuff or whatever, every one of these commandments is based on the idea that human beings, we have value. Just because God made us and we are. Isn't that beautiful? And one of those commandments is very, very long. Do you know which is, apart from the spiel at the start, most of the commandments are really short, like do not steal, do not murder, do not commit adultery. They get three or four words. One of them gets 92 words. And which one is that? The third commandment. Which is, well, it's this. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. And a bit more. 6 days you shall labour and do all your work, but on the seventh day it's a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, your son, your daughter, any of your servants, not even your animals or the foreigners in your house, for in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but on the seventh day God rested. Therefore God blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. We got like all these 10 rules, really short. And then there's one that just goes on and on and on and on. That one must be pretty important, do you think? And it must have been important to them. So what I love about these commandments is that these commandments are about you and me being infinitely valuable, totally loved, independently of what we do. And so the third commandment says, not be active. Active people are good. Not be attractive. Attractive people are good. Not be productive. Just be. Because you're valuable as you are. You don't have to achieve anything, remember anything, earn anything, or prove anything to be loved by God. And so God actually says, in the midst of these rules for life, if you did nothing and earned nothing and achieved nothing, you'd still be infinitely valuable because I made you and I love you. And so today, I want to just add one little extra bit to our sermon series on anxiety and worry, and that is, let's keep the Sabbath. Now, I better do a bit of basic teaching on the Sabbath, hadn't I, before I get into what this does. Who's heard this word? Just put up your hand if you heard the word Sabbath. Yes? Who's heard it a lot? Put up your hand. Great, not many. So, when the people of Israel started, what were they? Where were they, I should ask. Where did they start building pyramids and all that stuff? Remember that? Egypt. So what were they? Slaves. The people of Israel started as slaves. This is how the Old Testament begins their story as a nation, as slaves. And God set them free from slavery in Egypt under the pharaohs and took them out into the desert. And in the book of Exodus, he gave them some rules for life. And one of those rules was, listen, slaves work 7 days a week. Slaves are owned. Slaves have no value apart from what they do and what they achieve. But not you. Oh, no, not you. I want you to take a rest. I want you to have specific time and times in your life where you say, I'm going to achieve nothing now. And that's okay. You're no longer slaves, you're free. And so this rule to them was radical. It was just, in the ancient world, this is just like absolutely crazy radical stuff. And Jesus comes along and Jesus says, this Sabbath day is a day of freedom. It's not a day to be obsessed about the rules and get perfectly right so you can please God to get to heaven. That's not what the Sabbath was about, as if you didn't have a day of rest, now you're going to hell. Jesus breaks this kind of obsession with rules and says, no, this is a day of freedom to remind you that you're valuable and you're loved. And so Jesus heals on the Sabbath to point out that the Sabbath is a day of healing. And Jesus breaks obsessive rules to show that this is a day of freedom. And so just in case you're wondering, the Jewish people, they took one day off every seven. What day? Saturday, the seventh day of the week they took off. And the Christians, following the resurrection of Jesus, started taking a different day off, or at least worshipping on a different day. Some of them probably took two, which is a good idea. And they started worshipping on what day? Sunday. And there were arguments about what day's holy and whether you can work on that day and blah, blah, blah. And Jesus had pretty clearly dispelled that kind of what we call legalism. But the early Christians wrote this. Some think one day is more holy than another day. Others think every day is alike. You should each be fully convinced that whatever day you choose is acceptable. So don't get obsessed about whether it's Saturday or Sunday and exactly how that works. The point of remembering the Sabbath is going, it's okay and vitally important for me to deliberately go against the world. Even if I'm a retiree, this is very important for retirees who think that every day is a holiday and then end up doing stuff all the time. It's vitally important for me to rest in God's grace. So the word Sabbath, it's from the Hebrew Shavat, and it means cease, desist, or stop. And I think nothing is better for working with anxiety and worry than taking the odd Sabbath, which is what Pastor Ray pointed out to me last week. So, I want to just say three things and then finish. These things won't take long at all. I want to say that God has given us a gift and an opportunity to take a specific kind of rest, a specific choice to pause regularly and say, and now I'm doing nothing because I'm loved as I am. And this is actually a spiritual discipline which all people at all ages can engage in. And we do it, I think, as an act of protest against a world that says only people who work matter. So I want to just go through with you three things we learn from the day of rest and then finish with a question. Three things we can learn. Number one, we need to take a day off from all of our regular activities and just change it up to learn to trust. William Willimon, one of my favourite writers, he says, Sabbath keeping is a publicly enacted sign of our trust that God keeps the world, therefore we do not have to. And Marva J. Dawn, instead of trying to create our own security, we worship the one who is our security. You know, sometimes there's a bill to pay, or a kitchen to clean, or a job to do, and sometimes, because of my anxious character, I choose to say, I'm not going to rush and fix that. I'm going to let it sit because God is the boss of the world. If I don't do stuff, God won't stop. He won't stop loving me. He won't stop being there for me. And so I don't take a Sunday. I take a Monday every week. And for me, this is a day for no emails and no phone calls. Some people take a Sabbath and they say, we're not watching telly, we're not reading news on that day. There's a challenge for you, newsaholics. Some people just deliberately change the day. But the idea is that we take a day where we don't try to fix things, maintain things, achieve things, and we just say, I trust God's got it because I'm saved by grace. The second thing about the Sabbath is that it's a day to honour the vulnerable. One of the beautiful things about serving here as a pastor is that we have this gift of the vulnerable all around us. I mean, Graceville is incredible, isn't it? And vulnerable people can teach us the truth about all of us. Some of us don't look so vulnerable, but we're all on the knife edge of mortality. And when we take a break, we actually honour the vulnerable because we take a moment to say, you know that thing that I really should do? I'm going to let it go and be vulnerable. Or that thing I should fix, I might just let that fall over and see what happens. When we take a moment to not look after everything, something could go wrong. And we're suddenly vulnerable. And by choosing to do that, and by choosing to not be productive, I'm saying I'm an ally of all the people that our society judges who don't achieve enough, or look good enough, or have the right style of life. I'm actually honouring them by reminding myself that I'm actually like them and with them. And by the way, if we get to live long enough, all of us will end up vulnerable. Deeply vulnerable. So it is actually vital in your life to pick a moment or a day or a time and say, and now, not I'm useless. No. Now, I'm so valuable, like a king or a queen, not like a slave. And now I'm going to achieve nothing. The final thing about taking a day or a pause or a Sabbath is that you learn to hear. Eugene Peterson, I gave you one of his books, Jim and Tess, he says, Sabbath is a deliberate act of interference and interruption of our week so that we are able to notice, to attend, to listen, to assimilate this comprehensive and majestic work of God, to orient our work in the work of God. Pastor Ray pointed out to me the countless texts where Jesus took a break and went off and prayed quietly on his own. And Pastor Ray said, that helps me. And I have found that unless I choose to get out of the regular, whatever the regular is, I rarely hear very well. I rarely hear myself very well. I rarely hear others very well. And I rarely hear God very well. So a Sabbath is a time to just pause. You can take a Sabbath moment right now and say, like the people of Israel, I'm not a slave. I am not valued depending on how I look, what I create, how hard I work, or what I produce. My value doesn't come even from how I make other people feel. It just is. I'm so valuable, I'm worth dying for. And in this sermon series, we've been looking at anxiety and worry. And the thing that I keep coming back to and saying to you again and again and again is, no matter how you feel, you are loved. The cross proves this. And even if you should judge yourself, the cross proves that God says, I'm not judging you. I'm with you. I'm for you. I have you. And so, whatever we do, let's not become obsessed by turning the Sabbath or something like that into a rule to get to heaven or to get God's grace. But let's remember that it is important to take a day to learn to trust in God's grace, that God's got it all. To take a time to be vulnerable so we can remember and be saved by grace. And let's just take a time, like we are right now, to hear God, because God is totally and fully grace.